outside the Limerick Athenaeum, also known as the Royal, here on Cecil Street in the heart of Limerick City, with three Limerick people who really do have a passion for cinema.
I'm Dave Burns. I'm involved in the redevelopment of the Royal Cinema. We're hoping to create a new four-screen cinema with media training facilities. We're also involved in the Royal Picture Show, which is four weekends of mini film festivals.
Hi, I'm Maeve McGrath, and I'm an actress and a producer, writer with She Company. And I'm a member of a very small film community, but a very passionate film community here in Limerick.
I'm Simon McGuire. I'm the lecturer on video post-production in the audio-video production course in Limerick Institute of Technology. I'm also the director of the Limerick Film Festival and also co-founder of the Behind the Scenes Film Network Group here in Limerick.
So I can recall myself actually queuing up outside here to see Grease back in maybe 77, 78. And Maeve, you too have memories of standing on the streets.
You'd get off the bus in William Street, you'd go down and get your penny sweets in Little Catherine Street, the little shop there, and you'd, you know, put them in your mala and up you come and you'd queue. You know, there'd be a long queue down the road depending on what film it was, whether it was Star Wars or, you know, Star Trek or something like that, and you'd buy your ticket and race in and try and get the back seat.
And have you been in here since you were a child?
No, not since, and so I'm really excited to go in.
So Dave, the building itself is locked up.
It's fairly derelict inside, but we're going to turn it into something a lot better, I hope.
So we're just stepping in off the street, and there's marble on the walls.
Well, this is the old marble box office. In fact, the ticket machine is still working, as it happens.
Sure, it's beautiful. It works perfectly. So that's your adult ticket, possibly, you know, that's your child ticket. And then you push down the lever and this opens and your ticket comes out there. Beautiful. You know, who creates that? We don't see anything like that anymore. It's gorgeous.
And Simon, you were there peeking underneath the window into the box office.
I was, because I feel as if we've been transformed back into maybe, you know, the golden age of Hollywood. Those films that you see of old, you know, of 1930s, 1940s, it's exactly what it would look like from a film point of view. It would make a great set, to be honest.
Is that something you're all the time thinking about?
Yeah, as a technical person in film, I mean, you're always looking for locations. You're always, you know, and even sometimes when you come across a location like this, I mean, and it's so striking as you come in, I already have about two or three ideas for short films now already, just based around this box alone, you know.
And we're in a huge dilemma whether to keep the box office in some shape or form.
Because you're hoping to restore the building to a working cinema.
There's going to be four screens. The roof's going to be raised to accommodate the two screens on the upper floors.
We might push in through the double doors into the main foyer. The double doors have closed and the traffic noise is almost imperceptible at this stage, and you feel you are entering somewhere special.
You are, you know, so cinema, like the theatre, is an experience. You're going to come and see something that's going to take your mind off the rest of your, you know, woes and whatever's happening in your day, you know.
A visit to the cinema in the 60s, 70s, 80s was a taste of luxury for most people, because they would be leaving a cold house and shown through a door by a uniformed commissionaire.
We're leaving the foyer now, channeling in through those walls, and there's this very dramatic staircase at the end of the foyer.
So here this is the auditorium. Wow, look at this. God, the ceiling is amazing. The ceiling's blue, essentially. It's like looking up the sky. I remember this balcony. Look at that behind you. The seats there are just perfectly preserved up here in the balcony. It's, you know, you'd sit into them, they're springy, they're that old style seats. But look how many you get in a row as well. You'd go into any cinema now, you'd never fit that many seats in. It's a joy to see it like this.
How films are presented really makes a difference. And it's such a different feel being here with a big screen in front of us.
It certainly is, because, you know, as a filmmaker, I mean, I've obviously had films up on a big screen. And what I love about big screens is, as a filmmaker, is not really watching it myself on the big screen, because I would have seen it, you know, a lot of times. It's actually being up the back here in a balcony such as this and watching the reaction from your audience. I mean, if you've done a comedy and they're not laughing, then there's nowhere to hide in the cinema. It's the only thing that's happening in the room. Whereas if you're at home and you're watching on TV or on your laptop, you're probably not watching the film and doing nothing else.
We go into a cinema now and it's surround sound and it's all of that type of thing. But here, look at the little tiny speakers on the wall. You know, you can't imagine what the sound was like here, you know, but it would have been probably 10 times better than what you could possibly be seeing on your TV at home. So you can imagine all those bodies packed in here, you know, and you can really feel that coming in.
How did you make the leap from becoming a cinema goer, sitting in seats like these, to actually making films?
I was introduced to it at a tender young age of 13 in CBS Sexton Street, where the tutor there was Mr. Matt Kelly. He actually got some funding to buy in professional broadcast equipment. You know, Matt kind of introduced me to editing. He saw that I had a flair for manipulating the picture and finding different ways of putting the jigsaw together. And I haven't looked back. I mean, that's 22, 23 years ago now at this stage.
I remember going to see Shim Satira, Ding Dong Dedero, Ding Dong Dedero, down in Tralee with my parents when I was 7, and I decided there and then I was going to be an actress. I knew I'd always spent a lot of time. My dad was an amateur drama. He was a producer with Anvil Players, and I knew that that was the road ahead for me. There was no question. And went to college at 17, studied drama in college, and went on into acting.
So you moved from the theatre stage to the small screen with your character Lorraine in Fair City. But you've shifted in recent years from acting on screen to actually creating your own stories for the screen.
But there was a kind of a period in the 2000s early where there really wasn't a lot of work being made. And so if you weren't making it yourself, you know, you were kind of up against a lot of people, and particularly a lot of work was being written for men. So for me, I felt it was a perfect opportunity to see what I could do. And I enjoyed producing. A lot of people say to me, oh, you're a director. I say, no, I'm not. I'm the opposite. I don't want to direct. Or I like being directed. I like to produce, though. So to find the cast, to find, you know, the crew, to get the money together, to find what film you're going to film, what that is, and to go through the process of that. I'm quite Monica, you know, in that way. I'm very good at dotting the I's and crossing the T's.
And where did your own passion, Dave, for the cinema come from?
From watching films, and I actually took a big interest in writing for a while. I actually sold a half-hour comedy script to BBC Scotland in the 70s. I wrote a couple of full-length screenplays with Harriet O'Carroll, but unfortunately we couldn't get anybody to read them, so they've more or less, they're in the cupboard now, but that's okay. The experience was tremendous, and it gave me a great understanding of how, you know, how essential a good script is in order to make a good film.
So we're coming all the way up now to the very top, the very back of the Royal Cinema. Maeve is itching to sit down in one of those seats.
Go. I am. I'm just looking at it thinking, I wonder, is it safe enough, you know, to sit down? But actually, you have a bit of room here, don't you? And your view is straight down. So you've nobody sitting in front of you in that way that sometimes if somebody big with a hat sits in front of you, you can't see a thing then, you know. But it's lovely just to sit into it, and it's a comfy seat.
We are hoping that the Royal, when it's redeveloped, will actually be the focal point for all the filmmakers and artists in Limerick. We don't just see it as a cinema, of course. We see it as essentially a meeting place, and you know, a place for the fermentation of ideas and for groups to get together with. And you know,
so there's a burgeoning film community here in Limerick, with whom to make films.
Oh yeah, it's a small community, but it's a fabulous community. And I could pick up the phone. Do you want to come out and you know, be an extra, help out? I could ring somebody at midnight and say, I absolutely need somebody to come and shoot for me tomorrow. I need to, will you help us out? And I know there's a number of people I could pick up the phone and ring, and they will come and do that for me. And I equally will go and do the reverse for them.
Simon, you co-founded the Behind the Scenes Network.
The Behind the Scenes Network was started in winter 2009 by myself and a former business partner of mine, Mark Griffin. And it really was his idea. He came to me with it and said, look, I mean, there's nowhere for anybody to go to just say, well, look, I have a film or an idea for a film, but I don't have a director, or I don't have a producer, or I don't have a cameraman or anything else. Maybe we should have a network of people that meet maybe once a month. And if somebody does need help in a film, that they can put them in contact if there isn't that actual person there. And here we are nearly 4 years later, 5 years later nearly. And I mean, the group has gone from strength to strength. I mean, we managed to bring people together, and that was all it was about. There wasn't any financial gain on our end or anything like that. It was just to bring people together, that's all.
There's a real dependency in filmmaking on other people.
You just need to look at the credit list at the end of any feature film. It just seems to go on forever. You know, the list of people who have worked on the film and the different skills they've brought to it.
And is that need for collaboration, is that an obstacle, Simon, or part of the reason you do it?
I think it's essential to have more than one set of eyes on an image. It's going to ensure less mistakes. It's going to ensure less continuity errors and so forth. My forte would be editing. I am a camera op as well, and I've done a bit of directing. But I would certainly acknowledge my editing is stronger than anything else. I mean, that is my forte. So if you have a director who's insisting on doing the camera work and then he insists on editing it himself, possibly then, you know, doing the effects and then kind of takes a lot of the roles, more than likely, it's just not going to be perfect.
You know, in a big feature, somebody will fix your props for you, somebody will fix your costume for you, you know, somebody will fix your hair for you. You don't do that yourself. And I know some people kind of laugh. They see pictures of somebody and they're getting their dress fixed by a costume and saying, can't they fix their dress themselves? Well, actually, no, you're not allowed. That's the job of costume, to fix your shoes, to do all of that, because everybody has their important specific role, you know, and that's what the wardrobe mistress or whoever it is trained for X amount of years, or the lighting person or the props person has trained for that many years, and all those little things tick the boxes and you have a lovely production hopefully at the end.
If we're looking to the future, one of the key bits is that next generation of filmmakers coming through. Limerick has got so many initiatives to support filmmaking, not just the behind the scenes, but also the Fresh Film Festival.
Fresh Film Festival is an annual festival for young filmmakers from about 10-year-old up to about 17 or 18. And it's developing connections with many other countries like Holland, Croatia, Denmark. Many very quite high quality films have been made by very young people, and Fresh Film Festival is a huge and growing success. It's a little below the radar. Most people don't know about it, but it's out there, and it's probably known better in other countries than it is in Ireland.
And Simon, you're the driver behind the Limerick Film Festival.
What we did with the Limerick Film Festival was to work in conjunction maybe with Fresh and now currently with the Richard Harris Film Festival, to provide, I suppose, an outlet for those students who finish up with Fresh, who can't enter Fresh after the age of 18. Where do they put their work now? You know what I mean? And a lot of them, we felt, were racing off to Dublin, racing off to Galway. And that's all well and fine. But unfortunately, Limerick then was creating a vacuum. So the Limerick Film Festival was created to stop, to plug that vacuum, you know, to keep the talent here. And again, if we keep the talent here in Limerick, it will help create more jobs in the industry in the Midwest, not just in Limerick in the city, but also in the county. I'm a firm believer that there are plenty of filmmakers such as Maeve here that are in the county.
Now that you're sitting pretty much in the back row of the Royal Cinema, if there was one thing that you did a moment that said, this is why I do what I do.
For me, I had a very, very small, tiny walk-on part in a film. I remember going in to watch it in the Savoy in Dublin, and to see my big mug that size up on one of the biggest screens in the Savoy, it was very, very exciting but scary as well. And I came out going, wow, yeah, I like this. It's a tiny little part, but yeah, it's lovely. You feel like you've achieved something.
There was a pinnacle moment, I suppose, when I was only, you know, when I was first starting out as an editor, when in CBS, the Joe Maxey show came down and filmed in the CBS, and their guests were the Cranberries. And myself and maybe a select few that were showing interest, I suppose, in TV and film at the time, we got various trainee roles, and my role on that day was just to give, I suppose, a runner for the lighting crew more than anything else. So I was just running in and out getting gels, but I had the privilege of just standing back and just watching everything then, you know, as they recorded. That was when I knew this was the industry I wanted to be in.
Yeah, I don't think my moment has come yet. Once we get this, the Royal rebuilt, and I have my free pass for life, I think that will be my creative moment completed, yeah.